The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 885. It's the 29th of September 2017. On the podcast today, I have Gil Holzman, President and Chief Executive Officer of Eco Atlantic Oil and Gas. That's ECO ticker. And Gil discusses their recent news regarding their 3D seismic activity and the option agreement they've signed with oil major Total. Also on the podcast, Dr. Clifford Gross, Executive Chairman of Tech Capital, that's TEK, talks about one of their portfolio companies' intention to raise $10 million via a blockchain token sale. And talking of blockchain, I'm talking to George McDonough, who is CEO of Kryptonite One. And this is a company that invests in blockchain investments. They've done very well as well. They're listed on the Next Exchange. So check that out. But you can tell blockchain is getting mentioned more and more, isn't it? So I think, you know, it's always worth, you know, learning about it, maybe seeing how to get exposure to it. And George will be talking about that. Plus, also on the podcast, I have Connor Campbell, a financial analyst with Spreadex, talking about results out for these following companies. Next week, this is Electric Components, ECM, Tesco results next week, and DFS. They've always got a sale on. Also on the podcast, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talks about Hotel Chocolat, that's Hot C, Curtis Banks, CBP, and Breeden Group, BREE. Plus, I've also got, as always, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs on the platform too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Gil Holzman, President and Chief Executive Officer of Eco Atlantic Oil and Gas. That's ECO ticker. Gil, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Justin. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Now, we last spoke just over a month ago, I think, and you've had a couple of bits of significant news out since then, so we'll cover those. But before we do, Gil, for anyone listening who's not quite aware of what you do, or new to investing, new to the podcast, can you summarise what Eco Atlantic Oil and Gas is all about, please?
Yeah, Eco Atlantic Oil and Gas is a fairly new AIM-listed company. We listed the company here in AIM on February this year. We are exploring for oil and gas offshore Namibia and offshore Guyana in Latin America or in the Caribbean area. Our strategy is quite simple. We come in early to prospective oil basins, somewhat underexplored, in stable jurisdictions. We come in early, we negotiate our way to as much as possible favorable terms on petroleum agreements, and later down the road we partner with the world biggest companies or bigger companies and the world best, such as Talo and recently such as Total, to help us carry the work program with their technical horsepower and with their financial backup. This strategy proves to be very fruitful for us. We did it in Namibia. We are now in a stage that we are almost drill ready offshore Namibia with our partners Talo. We are fully carried with a certain cap for the first exploration well there that hopefully will come in the next year or so. And we, as I said, we duplicated this strategy in Guyana, where we were awarded together with Talo again as our partner of choice. We were awarded with a certain block only a year and a half ago, and we already enhanced and expanded the work program, and we are post 3D already, and hopefully we will be drill ready even next year.
Yeah, and with sort of majors like those involved, the names you've mentioned there, then these resources probably not quite sizable. And so what do you know about the prospective resources here, Gil?
Talo has 60% of our block in Guyana, and they're the operator. We currently have 40%, and as a joint venture partner. As I said, we recently completed, just 3 weeks ago, we completed a very big 3D proprietary survey. We covered 2,500 square kilometers over the entire block. The block itself is 1,800 square kilometers and is located only 6 kilometers up deep from the recent huge Liza and Payara and Snook discoveries made by Exxon. So the area is very prospective. We see the same trend, as I said. We're up deep, 6 kilometers up deep from the Liza field. And the Talo technical team at the moment assesses that we might see a prospect of around 1 billion barrels or 900 million.
Okay. All right. So let's go back on the news then. So let's go into the detail of that. So, like you said, you've got that resource there. They complete that 3D seismic. And is there any other bits of detail in there we should need to know there, Gil?
Excuse me. I'm sorry. I couldn't hear you very well.
I was just saying that seismic. Is there any other bits of detail in that bit of news you released on the 5th of September that we should need to know? Bring out the highlights there, if you could.
No, we completed the acquisition. We are shooting the seismic over a period of 50 days, as I said, 2,500 square kilometers. Mm-hmm. We completed the acquisition, and now we are busy processing it.
Okay.
The Talo technical team, which are very experienced, already had a quick look at the unprocessed data, and they see, a lot of prospectiveness. Mm-hmm. And we know exactly what we target, because based on the 2D that we already analyzed, we know where the leads and the targets are.
Yeah.
So we are in a processing stage. I assume it will take us anything between two, 3 or 4 months in order to complete the reprocess of the full data package. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, we were approached by several companies, some of the biggest names in the industry, and we ended up with an option agreement with Total, the French supermajor, according to which they have an option to farm into this block once they review the 3D process data. They have 120 days to review it and to take and to make the decision to farm in. If they decide to farm in, they will gain 25% working interest on the block. They will pay us $12.5 million that will put us in a stage where we are fully funded to pay our share of the cost of at least 2 or maybe even 3 exploration wells over there.
Yeah, this says something, doesn't it? I mean, it's very positive, this, isn't it? Because now you've got Total, Talo, and you've got yourself there, and these are multi-billion-dollar companies, and there's you, a 25 million market cap. So this must, some prove up your strategy here, doesn't it, Gil?
Exactly, and I can tell you that personally, and from a corporate perspective, I'm very proud and honored to be a partner, a joint venture partner with Talo on the one hand, which we are partners for the past 4 years already, and we have great working relations, and now with yet another giant in the likes of Total. So you have 3 giants over there. It's Eco Atlantic, Talo, and Total.
Yeah, exactly. So this option, so what's the date around it? So when can they take up this option, and how long have they got?
As I said, once we complete the reprocessing that is underway at the moment, let's be realistic, it will take 3 to 4 months. Once we deliver the full package, the process data to Total, they will have their own people look into it, and they will take the decision whether they want to farm in. I think they would very much like what they see, and I think that we're going to end up with Total as a very significant partner with us in Guyana, exploring and drilling the prospects on the Orindwick block. But there's still some time to spend in order for them to take their decision. But the fact that they were willing to option right now and mm-hmm. to keep their first priority in, and paid $1 million just for the option, I think it speaks for itself. On top of that, I think that for Guyana, it's a very significant indication as well, because until today, the only dominant supermajor there was ExxonMobil, and hopefully once Total decide to come in, then you will have at least 2 big companies, the likes of Total and ExxonMobil, add to this the Talo boys, add to this the Repsol and others. So the area is now being occupied by the biggest and the most successful names in the industry, and we are only very fortunate to be in this kind of a company.
Yeah, so I'm intrigued. How does this happen? How does these super majors, how do they approach? I mean, you know, who makes the connection? What happened there? I mean, I don't know if you'd like to reveal this, but do they come to you? Do you go to them? So how do you make the connection here, Gil?
That connection was made. We don't need to go into the details.
Okay.
At the end of the day, we are a public company, and you have people at every, you know, every serious company, you have people that would follow what you do. You would follow the area, and if they think there is an opportunity, they will find a way to communicate. It's not a problem. It's an open world, and everyone knows everyone. And if they want to approach someone, especially if it's a public company, they know the way.
Yeah, well, I've got to say, it's a huge vote of confidence in your project there, that they've come in, like you said, and agreed to spend sort of $1 million for the option. So that's amazing. So well done there. So, Gil, one thing left to do. If someone's listening right now and they like the sound of what's happening down there, but are not yet following you on Vox Markets, could you give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page, please?
First of all, we have, as we just demonstrated, we have very interesting things going on. We partners with the world best, Talo, Total, and the ASEANAM boys in Namibia. We are probably in the two most prospective areas and the most interesting areas in the oil exploration world at the moment. And following us is following an interesting company with some very near term. Interesting catalyst. And the way to do it is through Vox Market, because Vox Market is probably the easiest and the most friendly platform and application to actually follow the market and those companies that you are interested in.
Yeah, and thank you for that, Gil. But I've got to point out, you know, anytime if someone does hit that follow button, anytime you release any bit of communication, they'll get it to the front screen of their smartphone. And even when you write a bit of communication on your wall there on your Vox Markets page, they'll also get it to the front screen of their phone. So they'll never miss any bit of communication that you send out. So
exactly. And as I said, we have a lot going on. We have still many interesting things going on in the pipeline. And as I said, we're getting closer and closer to drilling decisions in both areas. So I would certainly suggest that if someone is interested in the space, to follow us on Vox Market.
It's certainly shaping up to be a very interesting project. Gil, thanks for coming on. And like you say, you've got a lot going on. So I look forward to chatting to you in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Justin. Have a nice day.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dr. Clifford Gross, Executive Chairman and CEO of Tech Capital. That's TEK. Cliff, thanks for joining me.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Justin. How are you?
Good, thanks. And you've got some exciting news out, and we'll cover that in a bit. Cliff, before we do so, for people not quite aware of what you do at Tech Capital, could you give them a summary as to what the business is all about, please?
Yeah, in a nutshell, our job is to create market value from university discoveries, and in particular, university intellectual properties. And so we establish various portfolio companies that seek to commercialize the intellectual properties that we've acquired, and we could talk a little bit about that later. In addition, we provide services to universities and corporations around the world to help them better understand the value of the technologies they hold and how best to commercialize them as well.
Yeah, and a lot of those technologies are sort of cutting edge, and talking about that today, you've announced that Lucid Limited is to launch a blockchain token sale, which is nothing more cutting edge than blockchain at the moment, nothing more hot than that sector. So can you explain this, please, Cliff?
Sure. First, just a little backstory about Lucid, if I may. Lucid is a portfolio company of Tech Capital, and Lucid has acquired a portfolio of intellectual properties, 13 of them specifically, that allow for the development of what we consider next-generation augmented reality glasses. And these are glasses that basically you can look through like normal glasses, but you can also see superimposed on the lenses information that's generated by a computer or your smartphone. So we think that's a very present marketplace right now. There's a lot of companies working on augmented reality products. And as a result of the technologies that we've acquired, we believe that we will be able to fabricate the first pair of augmented reality glasses that actually look like regular glasses. They have a wide field of view, very low light leakage, and are thin and lightweight, so comfortable, ergonomically correct, so to speak.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I think it was Tim Cook from Apple about last year said someone asked him about virtual reality. And he said, I don't think virtual reality is the next big thing. I think augmented reality is. And so I think it makes sense, doesn't it? Having a sort of enhancing your sort of life with a useful sort of augmented reality sort of fits really. Because I mean, you know, I can't see why people want to be taken to a virtual world. They want a real world, but made more practical really by the use of augmented reality. And so it's a very exciting space. So what are you doing? You're raising. You've done a token sale, which is quite a unique way of raising money. Why token sale, please, Cliff?
Well, we think that there's an appetite right now for high technology products with blockchain financing. Raising capital using a coin or token offerings has been increasing steadily over the last 2.5 years. In fact, this year, more capital has been raised using token sales than in traditional venture capital venues. Mm. And so we think augmented reality products, which are sort of focused on really creating the next generation of portable computing, are wonderful candidates for token sale financing. We're conducting the token sale to allow us to accelerate the development of prototypes based on the proprietary technology that we've already acquired. And to do this, you need a very knowledgeable team. So we've assembled a team of 9 people as part of Lucid, and we think we have the right team and the right technology to make a go of it.
Okay, so you've got three questions in one here. So how much are you looking to raise? What will this do, and how do people take part in this raise, Cliff?
Okay. We're doing a token sale of up to $10 million U.S. dollars. And what that will enable us to do is build the first generation, sort of next generation augmented reality spectacles that incorporate the technologies that we have, which are basically see-through head-mounted displays using light guide-based on-phase conduit mirror nanotechnology. It's a mouthful, and I apologize, but it's leading edge technology that allows you to make a lightweight pair of glasses that can superimpose computer images on them. And the way people participate is the way you would participate in any token sale: is you go to the appropriate website, you decide whether or not, after reading all the materials, it's something you'd like to get involved with. And if you want to, you could purchase tokens using your Ethereum or Bitcoin wallet that you have to make the transaction.
I understand. And so, essentially, I mean, you obviously have some kind of timeline towards for the launch of these products. So when do you see the first one sort of being commercially available, Cliff?
Early 2019, we think, is a realistic timeline.
Mm-hmm. Okay, excellent stuff. All right, well, you've got a lot going on there, Cliff, and for people listening right now, like the sound of this, but they're not yet following you on Vox Markets, could you give them 3 reasons why they should hit that follow button, please?
Yeah, I think the major reason is this. The pace of innovation is quickening. New discoveries are coming out at a much faster pace than they have historically. And there's a lot of good examples in the marketplace, you know, such as autonomous vehicles, and drones, robotics, nanotechnology, new developments in treating medical diseases based on genomics. All of these things were really dreams, you know, 10 or 15 or 20 years ago, and they're happening very quickly. So the way to keep up with the pace, the quickening pace of innovation, is to source innovations from the world's greatest idea factory, and that is universities of the world's collective capability to generate new intellectual properties. At Tech Capital, we've built the largest network of university suppliers of intellectual properties. We have more than 4,500 institutions in our network where we capture the discoveries from those institutions. And we have approximately 60 scientists now in different verticals that help us screen those properties to find the ones that have the most sort of potential energy and that can be commercialized. So that's the major reason. So we feel we have our finger on the pulse of new university-developed innovation globally. And from that pulse, or able to select, hopefully sagaciously, properties that we can commercialize. And Lucid is a great example. So we've selected 13 properties from a major university in the augmented reality space. We assembled the team in the portfolio company, and now we're conducting a token sale to finance that team to build the next generation prototype. So I think that's an example of what tech capital is able to do. We have a number of other, what we view as wonderful portfolio companies, like Bellscura. We have another one called Solaris, which has acquired a new technology for producing salt that has much less sodium than traditional table salt. And we have a Crackle Bake technology portfolio company that makes a coating for protein that reduces the fat. So we have a variety of portfolio companies, but they have things in common. They have what we view as disruptive new technology that, if successful, could really not only create revenue and profitability for tech capital, but can actually change things in a positive way in the world.
Excellent, Cliff. Well, listen, you've got a lot going on, and so including this exciting new project via the blockchain here. So no doubt we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much. Speak soon.
Oh, you bet, Justin. Thank you kindly.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is George McDonough, CEO of Kryptonite One. You all right, George?
Yeah, very good. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
That's all right. Now, listen, many people may not have heard of Kryptonite. You were on the podcast a while back, but people may not have heard of that. So, George, explain, what is Kryptonite One?
Kryptonite One is a publicly listed investment vehicle that invests in what we call the token economy, which is an area of the blockchain space that's grown up recently. People might have heard of the term ICO, and we're in that space.
Yeah, well, I'm sure people have heard of blockchain and Bitcoin, depending on how the level of people's learning on this issue. But blockchain is supposed to be becoming the big sort of thing, isn't it? As far as decentralized activities concerned within money and ICO. Should you explain that, please, because there are people listening probably never heard of ICOs. Explain that if you could.
It stands for initial coin offering. Essentially, there's a certain type of business that's appearing mainly on a particular blockchain called Ethereum, but there are others. And Ethereum allows for what are called smart contracts. And if you layer these smart contracts together in interesting ways, you can produce things that look and act like businesses. Back in the day, only a year and a bit ago, these businesses found it hard to raise money through the regular VC channels. So they went to the community and said, will you back us? And so in return for a cryptographic token, which is a little bit like a Bitcoin, but specific to their project, they hand those out to the market in return for finance. Then they take that finance, they go and build the platform. And then once it's built, the token which they gave out in their crowd sale suddenly has some use. And that's effectively a sort of breakdown of the ICO model.
Yeah, and I've got to say, it's gone a bit bananas, isn't it? I mean, I've unsubscribed from. I used to be signed up to this this website that used to send out current or about to be ICO companies or blockchain companies, and I was getting so many that I just unsubscribed. I thought, this is ridiculous now. There can't be this. I mean, it's almost like I remember the old .com boom. It's like any company that put a .com on the end of their name would see a re-rating in their share price, and it's gone to the stage where people almost like it's like money for a rope here. People realize that they can make money, and so I suppose people have to be aware and do research and their own due diligence on what these people are raising money for, because it's almost like saying, oh, I'm a banana seller, but I'm going to go on the blockchain, and then all of a sudden they start raising millions, because some of the market caps of these companies are massive. So you're a sort of fund on the next exchange that invests, that do. I mean, you probably take the hard work and the homework out of it for people, because you sort of do your own research and you invest in a number of these blockchain businesses, don't you?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it is currently a bit of a bonanza going on.
It's like the Wild West. It's the gold. It's mad. Yeah,
it is. But you can find a way through it. And unfortunately, when Ethereum went up in value hugely, there's a lot of trapped value in there because people don't want to take it out. So they want to invest their profits further. And so, you know, where there's willing investors, people are going to create businesses to attract that investment. Some of what's being built is truly groundbreaking, and you know, will indeed be very significant players in the future. And of course, you know, on the other side of the spectrum, there are things that are less interesting. And my job and the job of my colleagues is to look at our network and talk to our contacts and gradually find our way through the maze and find brilliant projects on the other side, which is what we intend to do.
Well, I've just noticed last time I went to your site actually was when we last talked, and I looked at your investments on your site. And by the way, people can go visit that. It's kryptonite1.co is the address.
That's correct.
/ investments. And last time I went there, I think I remember Augur was there, Gollum was there, Ethereum was there, and a few others, I think. But now you seem to have really upped your ante here, and you've got, I don't know, how many investments you've got?
It must be around 13 or 14, I think. I haven't checked recently.
So why the ramp up? Why the sudden ramp up in investments here?
Well, it's sort of two things, really. One, off the back of success, I suppose. Mm-hmm. We have more funds to put into interesting projects, and then also our network has grown hugely. So the people we're talking to and our status amongst the community, I suppose, has grown, so that we're getting a lot more calls, we're getting a lot more people reaching out to us saying, would you be interested? And I mean, as you say, there's so many ICOs going on all the time. Really, the first filter would be who hands you the project. And we've got some great people that we know and who we trust, some brilliant technical advisors, and so we're being handed really interesting projects from our network, and so could combine that with the fact that we've had some successes, we're investing more and more.
Well, take us through some of those successes. Which ones have done quite well for you of late?
Well, we're very excited by what happened with Omise Go. That is at least 30 times up. They had an absolutely fantastic team, great pedigree, and they bartered some form of deal with McDonald's in Thailand. So they're sort of back end payments system, and that's obviously seen the price skyrocket, I think.
Yeah.
So that was fantastic, and that's given us a huge opportunity to move into other areas with the finance that we received from that investment. And then we're also really excited by what Funfair are doing.
I like the logo Funfair. It's so nice. What is Funfair? Is it gambling or some sort?
Well, it's interesting. Funfair is a casino software producer. So they build casino games. They don't run them themselves. They license
I like
them
that
to
idea.
Casino
already.
Operators.
Yeah.
And what they do is they use the Ethereum blockchain to produce what are called provably fair casino games. So people using these games, you know, they have baccarat and roulette and slot machines and things. People using them know that the system behind it is an Ethereum smart contract system that cannot be cheated. So that's one thing. And also they pride themselves on producing games that are as good and as quick as the sort of legacy games, but you get these added benefits to them.
Yeah.
So we're very excited by that. And Jez Sand, the CEO, is truly a fantastic chap. He's been in the space a very long time, and he's easily backable, put it that way.
Yeah, okay. And of late, there's been a bit of an issue, because I know Bitcoin hit like $5,000 for one Bitcoin, and so, but since it hit that thing, we've had a bit of an issue with China banning ICOs. Isn't that the case?
Yeah, that seems to be the case. It's always quite difficult to know exactly what's going on. They move quite quickly, and there's a lot of sort of whispers that come down the line in terms of exactly what's going on. But it's clear that they have sort of pressed the stop button on pretty much everything. I don't think they've touched mining yet, but certainly exchanges and ICOs. And I, It's hard to know exactly where things will go in the future, but I'd imagine they're working on some kind of licensing scheme to basically put a line in the sand, and projects on this side are given the go-ahead and projects on this side aren't. But that's pure conjecture on my part. I couldn't say whether that was the case or not, but that's my general thinking on the matter.
Yeah, so when you're looking for an investment, you know, because there's so many out there now. Don't you? I mean, even if you look at, I'm looking at now CoinMarketCap.com, and they've got, you know, when I first discovered this site, I was amazed by how many companies are in the do these coins, because you know you got 100 on, and that's just the first page, and literally if I scroll down to number 100, it's like their market cap is it's like about a million. So, I mean, even that is the hundreds, you know, and Bitcoin itself is massive. I mean, what is that, 1 billion odd or something ridiculous? Or, no, it's in, I think...
Yeah, it's probably around the
1.5 billion, yeah. So 1.5 billion. But anyway, so what do you look for in an investment like this when you're looking into this? Because there's so many of them, what I'm trying to say is, well, you know, what do you look for?
The thing is that the blockchain is a technology that, you know, spans across all verticals. Really, it has a place in many different areas of, you know, our commerce systems and our financial systems. So it's correct to say that, you know, there are, you know, vast areas that are going to be utilizing this technology. But in terms of what we look for in the token economy, it's basically if you can take the token out of the project and the project still works, then it's not something that is, best practice. These tokens need to be at the very heart and soul of the project. It's where all the value should be in the project, and that lends itself to a certain type of vertical. There are ICOs happening and token layers going on all over the place in sort of companies that really don't need it. So what we look for are protocols and platforms that have to have the token in them for them to work. Yeah. And then you look at the team, and then you look at what it is exactly that they're trying to produce. Is anyone else producing it? Is it a crowded space? Are they out on their own? And you just gradually form, along with our technical advisors, in terms of looking at the code, you form a clearer view of you know, how powerful the platform's going to be and how valuable the token's going to be.
Yeah.
That's the sort of basic overview of it. But you're right, there is a lot of projects that you know just don't need a token layer.
Yeah. And one final question. So, you know, what is your strategy? Is the strategy to hold and until these? Or is it, I mean, are you more short termish, or is it different strategies for different companies?
Yeah, we do different strategies for different projects, but we do generally have a buy and hold mentality. Mm-hmm. What's fascinating about this space is that because the tokens come to market quite quickly normally, you can have made an investment and 4 weeks later you can be on the exchanges with price discovery happening. You can manage your risk very quickly. You don't have to wait for a Series A or a Series B or anything like that. You can literally change the ratios within a month. And so that allows us to get into a lot of projects, because we can take out, if we've chosen correctly, obviously, and the project's done well, we can get out what we put in and immediately place that back into another interesting project. So it's a very fast-paced investment, which is very exciting. Mm-hmm. So generally speaking, we look to get out what we put in with some kind of multiple, and then hold the project in line with its roadmap. Yeah. So each project has a different roadmap, and we'll hold tokens depending on how we feel the project is developing and what the sentiment of the community is and that kind of thing.
Okay. Well, George, if anyone's listening right now that likes the sound of this exciting, fast-moving space, but only just learned of you, then, of course, they have to do it because of the next exchange. But, you know, give them three reasons why they should do some more research on you, maybe add you to their watch list.
Well, I think one of the interesting things about us is because we're the only publicly listed company facing this space at the moment, our shares can be put in an ISA. So there is the ability to get sort of tax-free exposure to the crypto economy through us, which is very interesting. I'd also say that our network and our brand has grown hugely in the last few months. So we're getting access to projects earlier than ever, which is very exciting. And also, I think, you know, we were one of the first in the space, if not the first, which means our track record is lengthy, and so far I'm very positive. So going forward, we see more and more interest in us because of that. So there are three for you.
Yeah, I did realise you could put you in the ISA. Can you?
You can. Yeah. Well, it's a public stock, and you can wrap it up and put it into a stocks and shares ISA.
Marvellous. Well, and if people are typing in, then what's the ticker there, George?
KR1.
KR1. Excellent, George. Good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll chat again soon. Thanks very much.
Brilliant, no problem. Cheers then.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Connor Campbell, market analyst with Spreadex. You all right, fella?
Very good, thank you.
It's the start of a new week, and you've got some companies there in the larger cap space that are reporting this week. So what are you looking at first? Which is companies first up, Connor?
We've got Electro Components on Tuesday. You know, they distribute the Raspberry Pi sort of mini computers. They're dubbed the Amazon for engineers. They, you know, send out you can buy various electrical components off them. They've had a very strong year. They sort of plateaued in the last, you know, month or two, but up until then, they're, you know, going great guns, really. It's full year figures in May. Reported revenue is up 17.1% to £1.5 billion. Pre-tax profit was up 66.7% to £128 million. You know, really, really healthy figures. It also said it was on track to deliver a further £5 million of cost savings in the new financial year. So, you know, three really big investor-pleasing headlines there. First quarter figures in July, even better, though. Some really, really strong revenue growth. I think underlying group revenue was up 13%. And if you break it down sort of region by region, you can really see where the company's strength lies. In Asia-Pacific and emerging markets division, revenue doubled from Q4 2017 to Q1 2018, from a growth of 9% to 18%. But revenue growth doubled, so from 9% to 18%.
Yeah.
In North America, revenue growth remained at 16%, the same as it was in the Q4. And in Europe, I think it grew from 5% in Q4 to 11% in Q1. So, you know, a massive acceleration in the first quarter of its financial 2018. Mm-hmm. I think on Tuesday in the second quarter, investors are just going to want to see the same kind of figures, really. You know, if it can maintain that kind of growth, then there's no reason why it can see another leg up and find another injection of momentum. Yeah. The only thing is, the company in July, it did warn that its trading comparatives for all of the regions will tougher as the year progresses. So we might not see the same kind of quite as explosive double-digit growth. And also, there's a sterling has risen quite a lot in September, and the company made repeated mention of the impact of Forex movements in its first quarter report. So I think the sterling's rise will warrant some kind of mention in the update on Tuesday. But, you know, the things are looking good, and as long as it can maintain, even if, you know, some of those figures do dip slightly, if it can maintain, you know, that sort of 10% revenue growth range in each of its divisions, then there's no reason why it can't at the very least maintain above that £6 mark.
Yes, and obviously it doesn't just sell the Pi, does it? The little computer Pi.
No. You know, I think it's been dubbed the Amazon for engineers. You know, it's
oh, there we are.
I think it's find anything, basically.
It's a big,
you know,
pie,
any little components you need.
Okay, cool. That's ECM there. Marvellous. Yeah, doing well. What's next, Connor?
Tesco on Wednesday. Tesco, far and away the easily the biggest UK reporting company this week. It's picked up in the last month or so, but it's had a pretty bad year overall, really. Not necessarily surprising, given that with inflation and real falling wages and things like that, the supermarket sector, which was already a difficult sector due to sort of like the price war across the sector, has become, you know, increasingly tricky to navigate in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at the start of the year, things were going pretty well. You know, it's January figures, like sort of festive period figures were good. It announced that Booker Group acquisition, you know, towards the end of January, which admittedly has then, that caused an initial spike in value, but has sort of, investors have been a bit more ambivalent about it in the last couple of months. But then it sort of really started to go wrong in April. It posted a 1% rise in like-for-like sales, which is, you know, very good for a supermarket at the moment. And its operating profit was up 30%, again, very healthy. However, it took like a big fine from the Serious Fraud Office that dragged pre-tax profit down 28%. And it did warn that it was seeing some pressures in terms of pricing, mainly due to inflation. It did say that it was trying not to pass those pressures on to investors, or customers. But, you know, that is still a concern for, you know, I guess supermarkets across the board.
Yeah.
Interestingly, first quarter figures in June, very strong. UK like-for-like sales, they easily beat estimates at 2.3%, whilst group like-for-like was at 1%. However, it still saw, you know, a big old chunky, I think it fell like 8% on the day of its first quarter figures, because that happened to also be the day that Amazon revealed it was buying Whole Foods. So that sort of overshadowed easily Tesco's decent growth. And even though, you know, of all the supermarkets, Tesco's best positioned to withstand any major move by Amazon into the UK supermarket sector. You know, there are a fair few supermarkets Amazon would need to knock down before it could really challenge Tesco. Just that purchase by Amazon really, really sent a shiver through Tesco and dragged it significantly lower, mm-hmm. and sort of left it really struggling, you know, in midsummer. Like I said, it's picked up since then. I think it's hovering just below the £1.90 mark. I think basically, if it is to recover in the second half of the year, final quarter of the year, it needs to maintain that like-for-like sales growth, especially in the UK. You know, the UK retail sector as a whole, you know, there are various concerns about it at the moment. But if it can still post another healthy UK like-for-like figure, then it could see it climb back above that 190 mark.
Yeah,
I think also the latest figures from Kantar Worldpanel suggest that Tesco is doing okay. I think for the 12 weeks ending mid-August, its sales are up 3%. So some healthy figures should be on the way next Wednesday.
Yeah, well, since June, it's after that drop-off, it's steadily climbed in a series of higher lows, all the way up from 165 up to sort of 185, but it's tried a couple of times to get above that 188 level, and it's a major bit of resistance there. So if the figures are good, this week, then it could break above that and go higher, but obviously if it's not, then it'll break that support. So it's at a key level here. It's a really tight wedge it's formed. So it'll be interesting to see on the chart there. Marvellous. Anything else, Connor?
Yeah, finally, we've got DFS Furniture on Thursday, their full-year figures on Thursday. And DFS has had, you know, things were going so well for the stock in the first, you know, 4.5-5 months of the year. By early May, it was trading at a 7-month high. Month later, it was at an 11-month low. Basically, it issued a profit warning in June, which wiped away 20% of value in a single session. It was a profit warning, and it blamed the election for the profit warning, which, I don't know, is it perhaps a bit disingenuous.
Why would people stop buying sofas because they're leaving the European Union? Why would that happen? I don't understand.
Yeah.
Oh my God, they're leaving the EU. Yeah, go on.
The election, I don't think the sort of the general election in June, I just don't think that paints a fuller picture of what might be wrong at DFS.
It's couples saying things like, listen, we're leaving the EU, I'm not going to sit down in my house any longer on a comfortable bit of furniture, I'm going to stand as a protest. So what do you reckon?
Yeah, well, you know, it did post some really ugly figures. It said that full-year earnings were expected between 82 million and 87 million. That was far lower than the 94 million that had been forecast by analysts. Then in mid-August, it sort of made it worse by saying that it would be at the lower end of that 82 to 87 million band, basically, because revenue in the second half of the year had fallen 4%, which is compared to a 7% rise in the first half of the year. So whatever the reason is, they have seen a dramatic drop off in the second half of their financial year. Interesting though, between those two very awful updates, and you can see, like, as it was building to that mid-August update, it was starting to see some kind of recovery that was quickly wiped away with that statement. Between those two, it bought Sofology, which was like a smaller sofa company, for 25 million.
Yeah.
Which is a bit odd given, you know, given how negative it was in that June update. But still, you know, if it, I think on Thursday, if, you know, I think people are expecting now earnings of around 82 million. Say if it could even post 83 million or 83.5 million. You know, anything that isn't dead on the lower band of that previously stated target, then it could, you know, it could pick up a bit more. But I'm not sure. It will need to say some, you know, say that the slate has been wiped clean and it is started to see a pickup in trading again and pick up in footfall and things like that in the last few months, I think, to really warrant a recovery.
Yeah, well, I've noticed that on my telly anyway, I've seen quite a few more adverts from sofa companies, you know? I mean, before it used to be just SFS or whatever it calls, DFS, and that was about it. But now I've seen that, in fact, Sofology, which they've picked up. There's another company called Fab, brought down by me, and there seems to be a lot more competition in the market. So maybe getting a bit squeezed. So maybe they are trying to, you know, grow their market share by buying other competitors, because it's obviously not a unique market. It's not a huge barrier to entry there. So as long as you can make decent sofas, you've got a chance, I suppose. And I suppose what DFS have, they have a bit of cash or a bit of backing there, so they can probably buy up competitors. But apart from that, it's retail, you know, and it's a competitive area, isn't it? You know.
Yeah.
So there we are. We'll see what happens on the week from DFS. And do you know what sticks in my mind? I always remember, I don't know which comedian it was, but he said, do you know what? And the line was something like, do you know what? I'm so lucky. I went to DFS and bought a sofa when they didn't have a sale on. And I thought, that's true. That's true. They've never not got a sale on. But, you know, if you do manage to get the one day of the year where there's no sale on, you are the most unlucky person in the world. Cool. Connor, thanks for that, fella. And
thanks very much.
We'll speak next week.
Speak next week.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communication. Do you know what, Al?
I'm very good, Jess. How are you? Well, no loose chat. Let's just go straight into it, eh?
Let's get into it. Yeah, Joe, it's busy. A lot of companies obviously reporting, so the podcast is very busy. So we normally have a little chat about the weather and stuff. In fact, what I'm doing now is we should just... What are you looking at, Al? What stocks?
Okay, three companies for you. First of all, Hotel Chocolat. Hot C is the epicode, HOTC.
Yes.
Now, we spoke about this company back after the interims in March this year. Shares were currently at 303p. Had anyone bought on the strength of that podcast, then they'd have seen a nice little lift up, in fact, as high as just over £4. The stock then came back around £3. Anyway, Hotel Chocolat, they're chocolate manufacturers, as the name would imply. They have their own cocoa plantation in St. Lucia, 86 stores, I think, nationwide, globally, because they also have outlets in airports and so on. They also have a very strong online offering. And I think when we last spoke about this, I couldn't understand why people would buy chocolate online, but evidently they do, as shown by the great set of figures that they put out this week. We looked at the interims when we spoke about this in March. Revenues were up 12%, EBITDA up 27%. The full year numbers yesterday, revenues up 12% to, again, 105 million. EBITDA up 32% to 16.3 million. All channels performing well. And the company, obviously, is now in the run-up to Christmas, which traditionally is a very strong time for chocolate sales. So just an interesting, we're at an interesting price point here, with the stock having come back to 303p, having had a year high of 405p, and it looks to me as though 3p is a good level to buy at, given that we've had a strong set of results. Brokers are very bullish about it. Liberum have a buy rating with a 365p price target. Berenberg hold with 330p. So there is, in my opinion, some potential upside from this level, given where we are in the year, and given that we've just put out or just seen a really strong set of full year results from the group.
Yeah, I was chatting about this company. In fact, last Friday, Connor Campbell goes through on the Friday from SpreadX some of the companies releasing news in the following week, in the upcoming week. And I was just saying, last time I went to this, nice, they presented very well, very posh chocolate, you know. But I bought some for the missus for their birthday, and she had it, and she's a chocolate fan. She said, yeah, it's all right. In fact, I prefer my normal chocolate. And I think, you know, it is gift. Is it? It's a gift. No one buys this chocolate for themselves, do they? No one buys expensive, no. Surely, on their, otherwise they're very self-indulgent, selfish person. But I'm just thinking, is there enough people to go, because the missus now, I won't buy it again because she didn't really particularly like it. And for the extra money I'm paying, I might as well get a, you know, a loads of chocolate from a normal, a Galaxy, or well, Cadbury's chocolate, you know. But is there enough people to go round? I suppose there is. Enough birthdays for people to just buy for, I suppose there is. Yeah, and you may get the odd one or two saying, I love that, and they'll buy again, but for some people may not buy again, because here we are. So is there enough to go around?
There is an audience out there for this sort of chocolate, as you say. I mean, me personally, no, it's not for me, but... you see them in airport outlets and so on. So certainly there is a marketplace for them. How big that marketplace is, who knows? But the one thing we do know is that Hotel Chocolat have the cost very tightly under control, as they have their own cocoa plantation. So they're not having to buy it in. They actually grow it themselves, which is a good thing. But again, you know, this is a strong little company. Came to AIM a while ago, and it's performed well since then. But I think, you know, given that we're in that seasonally strong time for sales, we can expect a lift in the run of Christmas. Possibly even the stock could sort of be part of the Santa rally. So whether you'd hold it for the longer term after that, you'd have to do your own research. But anyway, Hotel Chocolat, I think, is one worth looking at this time of year.
Yeah, maybe. I think it'll retest. It recently peaked 320. I think it'll come back a bit now. Cause I just think it's very rich. Like the chocolate itself is like, you know, it's a P48 apparently. So market cap of 350 million. When you look at the pre-tax profit of, you know, just, I know it's up 100%, but it's still 11.2 million profit though, and their market cap is 385 or 350. So it's quite a rich valuation there, isn't it? So if they can continue growing, fair enough, but will they? I don't know. We'll see, you know.
I think they can grow through sort of increasing efficiencies, such as keeping costs down and ramping up sales using economies of scale. They've got their own plantation, and as we've already stated, so I think that's where they can do it: keep the costs low and increase sales and outlets without really impacting on the overhead. So
those little outlets are quite good, I suppose. They've got 15 shop plus cafe format stores, so that's quite good. So you can put them in other stores, or especially, you know, in like airports where people would buy gifty stuff like that.
That's,
you know?
It, yeah.
Cool.
That's
all
what
right.
I've seen. I mean, we went out from Gatwick recently, and there was one there. So yeah, that's it. I think that's where the scope for growth lies with them. But also, as I say, it's seasonal period now, so the sales should be good for them, certainly in the run up to Christmas anyway. So yeah.
Okay,
good.
Cool. What's next, Al?
Okay, it's a company called Curtis Banks Group. CBP is the epic code.
CBP, right?
CBP, yeah. This was brought to my attention by a colleague, Dr. David Paul at VectorVest. It's one of the stocks that the VectorVest stock analysis and portfolio management system has flagged up. Now, Curtis Banks, we've talked about other companies like this. They provide pension administration services for SIPs, small self-administered pension schemes as well. There are other companies like this, Matteo Lightwoods, we've discussed before, and other such companies. But this is a company that's very much in its ascendancy. The company announced interims to the end of June on September 4th. They have just recently completed the acquisition of Suffolk Life, and it's bedded in very well indeed. The company half-year operating revenues were up nearly 100%. Pre-tax was up 85%, and also the company upped the dividend from 1 pence to 1.5 pence at the interim dividend. The CEO Rupert Curtis said it had been a very strong first half. They now administer over 75,000 SIPs, 23 billion of assets under management. But historically, the performance of the company has always been weighted to the second half of the year. So they're very confident about the second half. So even though it's had a fairly stellar first half, there is an awful lot more to come. And VectorVest monitors such things as the earnings growth rate. And it's system flagged up the potential of this company a year ago. Shares were around 20 at 176. 6p. They're now just under £3. And VectorVest, there's a chart on the article on the VectorVest blog website where you can actually see the actual valuation that VectorVest has in a green line represented by the actual price performance. It's got a valuation of 366p, and obviously where it is at the moment, there's still an awful lot more to come. But I think with the metrics of VectorVest indicating the stock is a solid buy, and also the fact that the company historically expects to deliver an even stronger second half, I think again this is a very good it's at a very good juncture for somebody looking at this to maybe dip a toe in and buy the stock.
Yeah, okay. Do you know what? When you were talking about that, I do apologise. I kept thinking about Hotel Chocolat. I don't know what. And I thought, they're looking for outlets. How about this? How about opening a range of hotels?
Hotel Chocolat, yeah, yes.
It's also quite a confusing name because it's not a hotel. You sell chocolate, but it's not a hotel. So
yeah, things just so you arrive at the hotel, you check in, you go down for your evening meal. Chocolate.
All chocolate, yeah.
Okay, go to bed. Get up the next day. What's for breakfast? Chocolate, yeah.
But, you know, it could be done in a nice way, though. All food would have bits of chocolate in it. I don't know. It's a lot of money to spend, I suppose, but outlet for them. But it'd be quite nice. It's one flagship sort of, you know, hotel somewhere.
I suppose you could have chocolate Rice Krispies for breakfast, couldn't you?
Yeah, it could be in Paris because of chocolate. Exactly. Yes. Chocolate Rice Krispies. Well, you could do that a lot. Anyway, that was CBP, Curtis Banks Group. What's next, Al?
Okay, this is an aggregates company. Again, we've looked at these companies before, and this is it's a company called Breedon Group.
Breedon L.
Breedon. No, Breedon, not Bleedon.
Okay.
BRWE is the epic code. Formerly Breedon Aggregates. The company owns a series of quarries and asphalt production plants and concrete production plants up and down the UK. 60 quarries, 27 asphalt plants, over 200 concrete mortar plants. And the company has grown consistently year on year on year. When we spoke about this earlier in the year, the company, we noted, had grown 15% over the previous year, 77% over 2 years, and over a five-year period, you'd had growth of 327%. So it's delivered consistent growth for its shareholders, you know, brokers are big fans as well. So most recently, the company announced its interim results in July. Revenues had grown 100%, so you've still got this phenomenal growth taking place to £326 million. EBITDA, underlying EBITDA up 57%, pre-tax up 50%. Debt had increased £246 million, primarily through a series of acquisitions the company had made. But this is what Breedon Group does. It basically it grows organically and it grows through acquisition. And obviously, it loads up with debt for the acquisition. Then the additional cash generated goes to the bottom line, clears the debt, and the company grows and grows that way. The executive chairman at the results stage said the company was in a very strong position for future acquisitions, and said the outlook for the UK construction market was encouraging despite Brexit, and also noted that the fact that the government was starting to move away from austerity would actually have a very positive knock-on effect for its business. So the performance to date, shares have been as high as 92.5p, as low as 66p, currently trading at 85 pence with a valuation of 1.2 billion. And again, if you look at the performance of this stock over the past 5 years, it is all top right-hand corner stuff. It's been a really solid performer. There may be a bit of a lull now with some profit taking after the numbers, but I think if investors look to get in around 80, well, between 80 and 85 pence, I can't really see too much downside from this level, given that they continue to make acquisitions at this rate and given that the brokers remain such fans. I mean, when we spoke last time, Jefferies were rating the buy at 84 pence price target. Still with a buy rating, up the price target to 102p. Peel Hunt, last time buy rating, 77p price target. They still retain the buy rating now with a 90p price target. And in all cases, the broker targets are well ahead of where the share price is now. So I think there's a very, if you're a believer in the UK economy and the continued growth of the construction industry in the UK, this is a very good proxy for that, because obviously it supplies all the raw materials to the construction industry, and it's growing by having economies of scale, by making good acquisitions, and as we've seen with the results, ramping up revenues, profits and EBITDA in a very convincing way.
Lovely. And look at the chart, it's quite strong. I mean, very rarely does it come back and test the 200-day moving average. It has tested the 125. Whenever it's done that, put the 125 moving average in the chart, whenever it's tested that, it's gone back up. But it's now in oversold territory. So worth a look at the chart. If the fundamentals continue the way they are, then you could see this could be, if you've done your research, this is no investment advice, this could be a possible entry price.
I think it's a good entry price. And also look at the five-year chart too. Look what it's done over the past 5 years, and I think it's just a consistent performance to the point where you could almost set your watch by the chart. I mean, it really has been that consistent.
How do you set your watch by a chart?
Well, metaphorically speaking, of course.
You have to teach me that, Al. I don't do that. That's more technical than I know. But marvellous stuff. I've still got things to learn here. Okay. Set your watch by the chart.
Yes. Set your watch by the chart.
Al, thanks for that, and speak next week.
Thanks, I'll speak next week. Cheers.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. Boohoo. Boo. Is Dicker there? Boo. At four, UK Oil and Gas, UKOG. At three, Hummingbird Resources, HUM. Obviously, gave a good account yesterday, a Bert on the podcast. At two, Frontera Resources, FRR. And number one, most followed company on Vox Markets, was Ascent Resources, AST, and we had Colin on the podcast yesterday too, CEO of Ascent, of course. At five, in the top five most liked RNSs, five is Sirius Minerals, SXX, quarterly development update. At four, Motif Bio, MTFB, half-year report. At three, EVR Holdings, that's EVRH, half-year report. At two, Asia Met Resources, ARS, the ticker there, head of, change of head office and company secretary. Old Doris is gone. I say old. I don't know how old she is. But, she's been there for a while. And number one, most liked RNS on the podcast, on the platform, I mean, in the last 24 hours, was from URU. It's URU results, final results there. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.